Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a special sidequel? Spinoff? Who knows? Who even knows what to call this? But regardless, welcome to the Film Stage Roundtable. This is going to be a whole new experience from the very same people who bring you the weekly film review podcast, The Film Stage Show. And this is going to be a little special, because rather than devoting ourselves to an in-depth film review, during these episodes, we'll be tackling a broad range of discussion topics related to the whole of film culture. We're going to have guests
all
and stuff.
Of
all of it, the entirety. We're gonna get guests as we go on. But for this inaugural episode, the core team, that is, of course, Amanda Waltz.
Hello, Brian.
Hello. And the man with the mustache, Bill Graham.
Still got it. Still got it.
You have to let me know if you ever shave that off.
I got close this morning, but
why?
But
why
just,
would you
just a little trim around the sides? Oh, just a little trim.
Because right. Texas is a the seventh circle of hell, probably
the
right now.
Hellhole.
It's got nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's good. I guess.
I don't know how hot it gets in Texas.
It gets pretty fucking hot.
It's more the annoyance of having to choose wisely what I eat now.
For Bill.
That's fair, because my dad had a mustache. Actually, he just grew it back, and now it's a full, like, Fu Manchu, which is, he looks like Jake the Snake. It's weird. But he would suck on his mustache after he ate.
Oh my god,
no.
That's weird. Why would
so
you do
gross.
That?
No,
because
no, no.
It's just a weird habit.
That is a super weird habit. All right.
So gross.
More about this brand new show we're doing before we get too sidetracked. So, as we said, it's going to be topics in film culture we want to talk about. Then again, no conversation happens in a vacuum. So, we want to extend an invitation to everyone out there to let us know what kind of things you want to hear about. If there's a particular bit of film news you want to know our take on, if there's a trend you've noticed, or if there's a cultural sea change in the world and you think it needs more attention, hit us up and we might just talk about it. At present, we're not entirely sure how often this is going to be happening. We're thinking every other week, but we're not sure.
I kind of like every other week, personally.
Yeah. Maybe if something huge happens, we'll break in.
Like
right
Disney explodes?
If Disney just decides to disband, we're probably going to talk about that. And a lot of that is going to depend on your outreach to us and your engagement. So again, reach out, because that's what's going to make this whole thing work. The best way to get in touch with us is via our many social media pages. On Twitter, you can find us at Film Stage Show. You can also catch us on Facebook by searching for The Film Stage Show. And if you really want to lay into us and send us an essay or a thesis, you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. Other forms of feedback, we of course love getting comments and ratings on iTunes. We fully encourage you to take a minute to search us out and let us know what you think. And then finally, of course, you can find these episodes posted on thefilmstage.com on the pages under the Features tab, the same place you will find all of our film review podcasts. So that's it. That's it for introductions. Is everybody ready? Bill, Amanda?
I'm ready.
Ready?
I mean, I guess.
Ready to talk some film news, but not really review?
Yeah.
My concern is that a lot of the joy in this comes from being viciously angry at you two for being wrong about things. So
I don't know. I feel like we fleshed out beforehand all of the topics that we were going to cover in this episode. So I don't think we're going to spring any angry surprises on you, Brian.
I certainly hope not.
No, we're not.
Oh,
I don't, at least, I don't know. Bill might pull something out of his sleeve.
That's totally possible.
Maybe.
But yeah.
All right. Well, this is going to be our first topic. So let's get into it.
The music choice.
Do. I'm sorry, Amanda. Were you going to say something about the music choices?
The music choices are odd. I'll just say that much. Tears for Fears followed by Joan Jett.
Well,
interesting.
That song is I Hate Myself for Loving You, which gets us into our first topic, which is separating the art from the artist.
Mm.
This topic comes up in the wake of news related to Johnny Depp's alleged serial abuse of soon-to-be ex-wife Amber Heard, and the renewed attention brought to Woody Allen's checkered past thanks to his comments at Cannes. And,
hey, Brian.
I think Roman Polanski's back.
Roman Polanski's back, too. Yeah.
Are you intending to keep the music going?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Asshole.
The whole time.
I'm going to fade it out. I'm going to fade it out over time.
Okay.
Thanks for paying attention to it.
He knows what he's doing.
I hope you know, Bill, that I can't edit that out because that music is still going on. And Roman Polanski's back. That was before we even settled on this. This is crazy. We have a lot of artists out in our world who have done some terrible things. And so we wanted to find out, what exactly do we do in a situation like this? Is it possible to separate the art from the artist and appreciate the creative output they're putting out there?
Mm.
Or is there a point where you just have to say enough and say, even though I may or may not like this person's output, it doesn't matter because I can't get behind them as a person. So Amanda Waltz, let's kick it off with you.
Yeah.
What do you think about the things that are... We could talk about Johnny Depp specifically, but I think that all of us were kind of divorced from him creatively anyway.
Right. Well, I think if you listen to the Black Mass podcast, we made it pretty clear that we were sick of his shenanigans.
A little
well,
bit.
I mean, come on. Like, seriously, he hasn't made a good movie in a very long time. So.
Well, not only has he not made a good movie, but... And I mean, this is kind of like beating a dead horse. I feel like everyone has said this. He relies so much on the power of his makeup team.
Crazy hats. Crazy
and wardrobe
hats.
Team for, yep. As opposed to his actual performance. I honestly have never been that infatuated. I've never been infatuated with Brad. Oh my God. I almost said Brad Pitt.
With Brad Pitt.
Johnny Depp.
Wow.
Oh, Brad Pitt, I'm so sorry.
You're not really like a fan of Brad Pitt either? Like, what's going on?
I'm not infatuated with Brad Pitt either.
Poor Brad Pitt's over here like, what the hell, Amanda?
That man's never done anything wrong. No, apologies
what
to Brad
mean
Pitt.
He's never done anything wrong. He left Jennifer.
Nah.
She's fine. She's married to the wonderful Justin Theroux.
That's true. She traded up.
Yeah, she really traded up.
Anyway, getting back
anyway.
On topic. So creatively divorced Johnny Depp a while back, but let's say that like this is someone that you cared about.
Right. Yeah, and you brought up Woody Allen, and I will say if you look in my DVD collection, yes, I still have DVDs.
That's all right. I bought 2 Blu-rays the other day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because my husband and I actually bought 2 separate Woody Allen collections. So we have a fair number of his movies. And it is tough sometimes when I look over and I see one of them and just think about how much I enjoy his movies and then think about his indiscretions.
The things both known and alleged that man has done.
And the thing is, I think the other problem is that you know, it's beyond the court case, of course, because in the 90s, this was such a huge issue and it was all over the news because originally that was the original case. I think it was for, not Sun Yi, but his other daughter. I can't remember her name, this isn't a new thing. It's like with Bill Cosby. I mean, this has been around for decades.
Right.
And I don't know. I think it's just that he says very stupid things and really whenever someone questions him about it and goes on public record about it and, you know.
Yeah, in the Hollywood Reporter, he responded to allegations that I believe his son had brought up against him by saying something along the lines of, oh, I try not to read bad criticism or like bad press.
Right.
And the reporter pointed out to him rightly, this is your son.
Right, exactly. I mean, his estranged son, because obviously Mia Farrow and that everyone has, they want nothing to do with him, justifiably. But it is tough. You know, I really enjoy movies like Manhattan, and with Roman Polanski too. I mean, Roman Polanski, you want to talk about something that's been following him for a very long time.
I mean, he doesn't live in this country for that reason.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's still making films, I believe. So.
Yeah, he just had Carnage and Venus and Fur.
Yeah. Is he coming out with a new one, or am I wrong?
I honestly don't know.
I don't think he is. No, Venus and Fur, I think, was the last one he did. But, you know, and I obviously, Roman Polanski has made some of the most amazing films in American cinema history. And how do you parse that? But it's also one of those things, like, the way I kind of... It's tough because, you know, they're not the only ones involved in the process. So when you're watching something like Manhattan, when you're watching something like Chinatown, you know that it's not just Polanski. It's, you know, the cast and crew, you know, but even then, it's just such a hard thing to deal with, especially since many of these films are so celebrated. You know, it's not just, if it was a new filmmaker came out and then they were like, oh, he totally molested a whole bunch of kids, it'd be so easy to just, but it's just, yeah, I don't know.
Well, that was what happened with the director of, Powder? I can't remember the name. Yeah, Powder, who then went on to direct that horror film with Justin Long, Jeepers Creepers.
What? Did he direct Jeepers Creepers?
Yep.
He directed Clown House, which is, if you watch Clown House, I think it was his first movie. It's a horror movie starring Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
It's pretty obvious he was into little kids. It's pretty disturbing.
What kind of, Bill, why don't we throw to you real quick? I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Like, what happens when you hear about something like this with someone that you like?
So this has always been one of those back and forth kind of ideas for me, because if you follow the lives of some, and I'm going way back, right? So if you follow the lives of someone like a Babe Ruth or someone in the history annals that is kind of a mythic figure, there's nothing really, nothing that you're told is really bad about these people, right?
Right.
But the further you search, the more you actually find out that there's a ton of stuff that the press knew about that, that they just had this kind of, yeah, but who cares?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
kind of mentality. Like, it doesn't matter that this is a bad guy. He's an amazing ball player. Or it doesn't matter that this woman is, you know, sleeping around with all these people because she's an amazing actress, or that she's taking drugs.
That this man is sleeping around. He's the president of the United States.
Well, and I was actually going to bring this up. So there's a guy named Gary Hart, who was a 1980. Oh, OK. So, you
know
about
this guy,
yeah. He was a 1988 presidential candidate, right?
Oh, Gary Hart.
And this is one of the first guys where the press actually realized that he was sleeping around with his
wife.
There was a
boat picture, I believe.
What happened was he had a on-again, off-again kind of loose relationship with his wife at the time. They had been on the outs. They had been back together. They had been on the outs. They had been back together. And during one of their momentary periods of just being on the outs with one another, where they weren't even, from what I understand, living together at the time, they were going through some rough relationship stuff. And he was sleeping around with this model. And the press found out about it, and one journalist in particular realized that, hey, maybe this isn't good character stuff for a potential presidential nominee. And, you know, Hart was like flabbergasted, because this is the first time that this has ever happened to any presidential candidate to this point. They never really dug into the personal lives of,
well,
like,
I mean, there was speculation about Kennedy.
There was speculation, yeah.
But the news never went out of its way to prove it. And with Gary Hart, like, they followed him around.
Yeah,
exactly. But also, Gary Hart was a nominee. Kennedy was, you know, obviously the president at the time when a lot of this stuff was going on. And it was like, oh, well, I mean, you're not going to out me, you know, from the presidency. That's not going to happen. But if we're choosing to elect you now, you know, maybe that's gonna matter at the voting polls, right? And yeah. So certainly that happened with Hart. He ended up withdrawing, I believe, from the presidential candidacy. And, you know, a lot of things kind of trickled down from there, where all of a sudden the press realized how much power they had, you know, in terms of things like that. And so what I'm kind of getting at is, a lot of this stuff for me, I feel like art is such a weird thing to kind of be, to put out into the world, to have people judge and things like that. And right. So there is kind of, I walk around with the mentality of kind of the head, you know, the head in the sand kind of situation, where I try the best I can to judge someone's art independent of who they are. So whether I like the person or not, whether I think the person is a scumbag or not, I try and just do my best to judge it as art itself and divorce it from the person. Now, is that fair? Is that right? I don't know. And in this world, we have so much attention paid, and I try not to, because to me, the National Enquirer, what else is there? Paris Hilton, TMZ, all of that stuff really just irks me, because it's to the point where I really don't care about these people's personal lives. I hate the fact that people make money following these people around, taking pictures of them. You know, you watch a documentary like Amy, and you realize how much the press just really muck things up.
And for me, that's kind of where I come in. I mean, I have confirmation bias. Like,
sure.
Crazy confirmation bias. So I already didn't really like Johnny Depp that much.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when I found out about this, like, that's all I needed to switch off. I've always had to live in a world where Woody Allen was creepy as shit.
Right.
So, again, not really a problem. Roman Polanski, I haven't really liked much of his modern output. So, again, not much of a problem.
I like Ghost Rider.
I liked The Ninth Gate.
Oh, like, yeah.
Ironically.
Oh, God, I forgot he directed that. I forgot about that.
So I haven't really had to deal with someone hurting me, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
I was coming up with a list of people who have done things like this, like Mel Gibson and his anti-Semitic tirade and the news that he had hit his girlfriend at the time. You know, I liked Mel Gibson, but he didn't really mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
It didn't, at that point, the world destroyed him so heavily that it didn't cost me anything to decide not to keep watching.
What about Flynn, Julie Delpy with her kind of racist comments recently?
Julie Delpy said something, and then
Isabella Gianni. She's in that new movie.
Yeah,
from
40.
She's in that new rape 45 movie.
Years.
Yeah, 45 years.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, here's my thing. I wanted to draw a distinction in this episode, at least, between people who have done criminal acts,
sure,
and
sure.
people who just hold opinions that I don't like. I could probably go on a 30-minute like soliloquy about my struggles with whether or not I should continue to purchase and support properties that have to do with H.P. Lovecraft, because that man was a horrifying racist.
Really? But, oh, he was. Yeah. There's a story where he calls his cat the N-word.
Yeah. That's the rats in the walls.
Yep.
He also has an entire story about just what a like mongreloid mess the neighborhood of Brooklyn Red Hook is. I mean, he's a deeply disturbed young man.
I really, really hope Guillermo del Toro, whenever he makes At the Mountains of Madness, plugs in some black, you know, give me an Idris Elba in there and just like give him like a main character role. Like that would just be beautiful.
It's harder for me to square it. It's, and again, it's a whole other conversation. What people say or think.
Sure.
I usually couldn't care less. Mm-hmm. What I have trouble with is people who've like broken the law,
right,
or have caused actual objective physical harm to others.
Yeah.
So like Errol Flynn had a thing for sleeping with underage girls. I mean, but I love The Adventures of Robin Hood and Captain Blood. So like, I haven't had to deal with this on a personal level. Like if I found out that Terrence Malick beat his wife or, you know, had a thing for running around bludgeoning hobos to death, that would be a real issue for me. I don't, I've never had to test this against my own self. And so the question that I wanted to kind of end this look at this whole thing with was, what do you think would be your breaking point? And does it change depending on if you like someone or not? Because if I find out that Johnny Depp maybe hit his wife even once, I'm kind of cool with being rid of Johnny Depp.
Same.
But if I found out that Terrence Malick hit someone with his car, I'd probably wait 3 years for all the evidence to come out before I decided I wasn't going to watch any more Terrence Malick.
So,
Amanda, do you have like a firm line, or do you kind of give it some?
Oh, I have a super firm line. And it does matter because I'm not out supporting Johnny Depp films. Well, I was forced to with Black Mass because I had to review it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would not have seen that movie.
But anyone who talked to you afterwards would know that you in no way supported that film outside of paying for your ticket that one
absolutely
time.
Absolutely. No, absolutely not. Yeah, I think it does matter if you enjoy the person's work, because it is a sacrifice. You know, it is a sacrifice to say, I am taking a stand and just cutting this person out of my life entirely, you know? And I mean, I did that. I actually did that with CeeLo Green, because there were allegations against him. Like there were some rape allegations against him where a woman said that I think he drugged her with Molly and then raped her. And he said something very stupid related to it. And I think he said something to the effect of, how can a woman know if she's been raped, if she's passed out? Which I was like, you know what? I'm just going to erase every single album from
my... I'm
pretty
glad that I didn't like him to begin with.
Wow.
I liked Gnarls Barkley, and I've erased every single Gnarls Barkley album. I haven't listened to it since then. I just completely cut him out. But it is, I think it's, you know, it's just one of those things, like I said, when I think, kind of like what you were saying, Brian, if it's in the courts, and if, you know, there is, you know, it's not beyond a shadow of a doubt, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easier, but it's definitely, you can at least sort of like grapple with it and enjoy the art at the same time. But if, you know, like with Woody Allen saying super ridiculous shit in relation to these allegations against him, you know, I probably won't watch any of his films here on out. I think what it is
we can't look forward to a review of Cafe Society.
Can anyone?
No, absolutely not.
But yeah. But no, Bill Graham. I have a hard line. I do have definitely a hard line.
All right. Bill Graham, resident ostrich with the head in the sand. Have you ever come across someone who did something so egregious that you couldn't deal with it anymore?
You know, I am trying to rack my brain about you know, this kind of situation. And it's funny because... I know you want to keep it separate from what people have said versus what people
right,
or
no
what
thought
things
crimes on this.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely been some interesting thought crimes where people have
thought crimes.
I guess the guy that is behind Marvel Comics, he said some, or he, I guess he, oh Jesus, I'm not going to bring
it. We're not talking about the Marvel guy, because I know exactly what you're talking about. And again, that is political.
Yeah.
Talking about crimes. CSI style.
Crimes? No, I've really not had anything like that to really pull away from.
Here's one for you, Bill. What about Bryan Singer?
Oh, I didn't even bring up Bryan Singer.
That's a good one pertaining to you, because you're a big comic book movie fan.
For anyone who forgot, Bryan Singer was accused of running underage sex parties.
Yes.
and exploiting the hell out of people. And that's something that just kind of, I don't remember a resolution to that.
It went to court. I don't think he was convicted. I don't think anything came of it.
I mean, I went and saw his movie, but that's, you know, I had to, and
I didn't pay for it.
I mean, obviously he wasn't convicted because he made another shitty movie, but
this is true. That's one where, again, I'd be fine tying the artist to the art. I mean, this is me. I feel like a hypocrite, but yeah, I would need someone who I think is a 10 in creative output to do a 10 in a crime and, you know, basically just follow down linearly from there. So like Johnny Depp's at a 1. If I found out that he just like forgot to feed his dog one day, I probably would have been enough for me. But, you know, he did something that was so allegedly so awful that it just kind of like, I snapped immediately. I was like, great. I even shot off a tweet that was like, this is one of those things that allows me to retroactively feel like I was right to hate this guy for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a perfect man. I have a vengeance streak in me.
And I think everybody could admit
views of art to do that.
Sorry.
Well, have
Amanda's
y'all,
dying again.
Have y'all heard about Leo DiCaprio and his pussy posse?
Yes.
Pussy posse.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh yeah. But I think that's consensual sex.
Yeah, that's just being a party guy. I mean, that's not Bill Cosby style. All right.
It's gotten to a point though where it's just like, wow, okay,
yeah,
this is a serious actor goes like he takes the work hard, play harder kind of mentality to like its ultimate conclusion, I guess.
Well, we can talk about that the next time we bring something like this up, which I assume will be personal lifestyle and politics, which may I would think that crime would be the thing that would piss people off the most, but. I would say politics. People might be a little more pissed off about politics.
Well, so, especially with this election.
Oh, yeah. It's only going to get worse. Yeah. So we'll save that maybe for November. We can bring that up. So that's it for topic one.
Jesus.
Let's roll on in to topic two, which is first person pronouns in movie titles.
Oh, I love that you're doing Billy Joel for me.
All right, Amanda Waltz, you chose this one.
I did.
Yeah. Now, this is something that we'd noticed when we were having a random conversation about boring movie titles. And that is that while there are a lot of movie title conventions that kind of annoy the shit out of us, there seems to be one that guarantees that most kinds of movies will be bad. And that is using a first-person pronoun in the title.
Or multiple first-person pronouns, which is even more egregious.
Oh, like the more first-person pronouns you have, the worse it gets. Which is why we're listening to My Life by Billy Joel.
Thank you.
So we want to talk about what is it that makes this title so, this kind of title, so appealing to makers of like schlock and pap?
Well, it's
an even weirder question. Is this what you were about to bring up, Amanda?
No, you can finish your thought.
I was going to say what's even weirder is the fact that like if you put it in a non-drama category, like into a horror film, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
So.
And so, because it's across the board. I mean, it goes from indies to rom-coms to just frothy romances. And I think the reason we decided to bring it up on this show is because there's a movie coming out called Me Before You, starring Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. And it looks just awful.
Come on. Give my boy Finnick some love.
Finnick?
Finnick from the goddamn Hunger Games?
Yes, Finnick O'Dare. Come on, man.
Oh, my God.
That is a name.
Do you know the actual actor's name, Bill?
No.
So we're just going to... Oh,
so I know that we... Because I know that we both compiled some lists. I actually... And I'm going to say Away We Go is one, which is with Maya Rudolph and from The Office.
Jim from The Office.
Jim from The Office. We don't know his...
Krasinski?
Yes. Before We Go, which is... Chris Evans directed this, okay. I think, just recently.
I never around to that one.
Nobody did.
It apparently wasn't that great. I was going to say... I Smile Back.
Which... As my friend said, no more movies about affluent but sad white people, because that's basically what this movie is. We're the Millers, that god-awful comedy that came out with Jenna, going back to Jen Aniston. Oh, girl.
I'm waiting for you to get to the one that I know that you really want to talk
about.
Well,
there's one more, because that's the queen of all the bad. We Are Your Friends, the Zac Efron Eden. DJ movie.
Yeah.
And the cream of the crop, Me and You and Everyone We Know.
Yep.
That fucking movie by Miranda July.
I would also add You, Me and Dupree.
You, Me and Dupree. Me.
Wish I Was Here.
Oh God.
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which some people liked.
I was filmed in Pittsburgh.
Well, there we go, I guess. Bill, did you come up with any that we haven't mentioned yet?
Man, y'all took a lot of them.
A lot of the good ones.
So here's my theory, and I was actually surprised.
There was
surprised.
Actually the one that won Cannes this year was I, Daniel Blake. So we'll have to see if that keeps up the trend.
Is it like I, comma, Daniel Blake?
Does that count?
I don't know.
Because we could throw
there's
I,
comma, Frankenstein.
No. I, Robot does not count.
Well, that's kind of going to what we were saying before, because it's really strange, because I feel like all these movies are either critically panned or just don't do well financially at all. So, but at the same token, horror movies... And I'm talking about We Are Still Here, We Are What We Are, What We Do... I guess What We Do in the Shadows counts.
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I know what you did last summer. Perfect.
I Saw the Devil. And there's this movie... This is my own personal thing. It's called Let Us Pray. It's actually a really good movie. It's on Netflix.
Now, is it P-R-A-Y or P-R-E-Y?
P-R-A-Y, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it stars, I always call him Onion Man, but I can never remember his name from Game of Thrones.
Oh, the Onion Knight.
Oh,
the dude with one hand.
Davos.
Is in it.
He's the train driver from The Wind That Shakes the Barley, which is directed by the guy who directed I, Daniel Blake.
We may need to post a glossary at the end of this episode.
Dramatis personae.
I love him so much.
Oh, he's great. I love that guy.
But he's in this great horror movie called Let Us Pray. That one's a little different because it hasn't really gotten a lot of attention, but just recommending it. But I think, and I was actually surprised that I didn't find any articles or think pieces or anything about why these movies don't do very well or why people have an aversion to them.
So do you have
the curve?
Do you have
an opinion? What about
my
dinner with Andre?
Well, see, that's the weird thing.
The original indie movie with a personal first-person pronoun.
Oh, there's probably more than that. But it seems like a more recent trend. I would say within the last 10 years that this is such a... And it's also such a, like, passive voice thing, like, indie twee thing to do to use these kinds of titles. Like, the fact that You and Me and Everyone We Know has an extra and. Like, go fuck yourself. Seriously.
me, Myself, and Irene. We Are Marshall.
No, that doesn't count.
That's schlock.
It's whatever.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh, God, Bill.
I hate Valentine's Day. No. So here's
what
I think.
Why did I get married?
Here's my very... I mean, it's a loose theory, but it's a theory. This is my theory on it, is that I think the reason people are sort of resistant to these titles, I think it's an unconscious thing where you go to the movies, you know, to escape.
Right.
I think that's fair to say. And I think when you see a title that is communicating like, oh, this is about you and me, or this is about, you know, your life, you don't want to watch that. Like, you want to escape the mundanity of your, like, you know, your everyday existence. You don't want to watch a movie that's about you or about people you know or about just... something that's familiar or relatable. You want to watch, you know, aliens shooting at each other, you know. And I think that's you know what I mean? Like
an inter-alien war movie?
Yeah, a good inter-alien.
Not even like aliens shooting at us and us shooting back?
No.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? You want to watch something that has nothing to do with you. And I think these titles, I don't think it's like a conscious thing, but I think it is your first reaction is, oh, well, I don't want to watch something that's about me. I don't want to watch something that's about like my life or that's something that, you know, I know.
I've got an idea that is similar.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a piece of us that when we go to a movie, we almost want to believe that this story mm-hmm. has come out of nowhere. And like yes. it's happening in real time. And you've got, you know, poor, you know, John Doe, and then he's trapped in a building and there are terrorists. Like, you want it to be a surprise.
Right.
And you want it to feel like this character didn't set out to have an adventure. And these titles rob you of that. Because
yeah.
it's like, come and listen to a story all about me.
Yeah.
This thing that happened to me. And the whole story is just about me. Like, that's what yeah. that's what a lot of me and Earl and the Dying Girl's biggest detractors said was like, this poor woman is dying of cancer. And this asshole is just like making dumb movies. And
yeah.
I feel like that's what at least I think of when I see a movie title like this. I'm like, you know, why do I care? Why do I care about you? Why are you so presumptuous that you think that I need to hear your story? Whereas you hear Star
right.
Wars and you're like, oh, it's about the Star Wars.
About aliens shooting at each other.
And Luke is my entry into that. Like, Die Hard is the story of this horrible night. And if it was called, like, my very worst, like, Christmas party ever, you'd be like, eh, you know? If John McClane was like me and the terrorists in Nakatomi Towers, it's just like
my
you know,
terrible, horrible, no good Christmas party.
But see, yeah, like what's crazy is that like if you take a movie like Alexander and the Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, and then suddenly you made it me and my horrible, no good, very bad day, you'd be like, look at this arrogant son of a bitch.
It is,
who
and I think that's what
is?
It is. You just like, you just, it's an instant aversion where it's like, this movie's talking about itself. Barf.
Yeah. It's like when a friend comes up to you and tells you that they had a weird dream and you're like, oh, if someone doesn't get naked within 30 seconds of this story, I'm going to be pissed.
Wait, in the dream or in real life?
No, in the dream. Like if the dream is like,
both.
My dog was there and then my cat was there, but they had swapped bodies, but they were still the same. I'm like, if something crazy involving someone that we know naked doesn't happen in this dream very soon, I'm out.
Well, and I think the reason that works for horror, and to be fair, sci-fi, is because it's very, I think it's sort of like the idea of like being made to relate to vampires or serial killers or monsters is a little more like,
or clones,
you know,
at an elite boarding school in the British countryside.
Yes, that as well.
Never let me go.
I think that's a lot more appealing, and it's a lot more sort of what do I want to say? Not scandalous, but you know, like it's a little more like ooh, like what's this all about? I don't know. It's a lot more fascinating than just like, oh, look, I'm just some like white lady who lives in the suburbs and I'm sad.
Well, you know what's funny is that one of the most clickable forms of journalism, quote unquote, on the internet nowadays are the personal stories and narratives. Like,
yeah.
This came to an apotheosis last week or the week before when there was a woman who wrote something for ExoJane that was basically like, oh, my friend's suicide wasn't a tragedy, her life was. And it was all about like how bad this poor woman with mental illness made this girl feel and how happy she was that she was dead. That was real fucked up. But somehow...
Yeah.
I think that we're okay with that in a rage-filled 1,000-word post, but we're not cool with it in a 2-hour-long movie. Bill Graham. You've been uncharacteristically silent. I would love to know if you have an opinion about why you think these films kind of either... It's a chicken or an egg. Do you think
I've seen 1% of these films. So
okay.
It's like,
so have we.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen quite a few of these that we've named, actually. I'm not proud of it.
I've probably seen Away We Go and like Me and You and blah 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 and all
I mean, I've seen all the horror movies that she's
had. Well, of course.
But it's funny because you mentioned movie titles, and really to me, movie titles, they really are kind of the bane of my existence. There's some films.
Because you have trouble remembering them.
Part of that is true, yes. But part of it is just the naming conventions in general that a lot of Hollywood and a lot of indie films have to follow are just monotonous and just the worst. I mean, if it's longer than five words and the is not part of it, then you're basically fucked. Like, your movie just isn't going to get made under that title. Now, a lot of these films go into production without even a final title. There was a movie that a friend made. He was a producer on it, and it ended up being made, and it had this crazy long title, and then it got retitled, and it was two words, the new title, instead of being like six.
I'll bleep this if I'm right. Are you talking about Balls Out?
No, not Balls Out. we might have actually done this film.
I'm super curious.
It had a guy from Lost that was in it.
Being very evasive. I want to know.
Speed Racer.
No.
Bone Tomahawk.
This came out 2 years ago. I believe.
Star Wars.
No, not Star Wars. But it was so funny. It was so sad and so disheartening because one of my buddies had been texting me about the film and had been saying how much he was looking forward to seeing it. And he kept on mentioning the name of the movie, the name of the movie, the name of the movie. And I was like, I've never heard of this movie. I finally told him. And he was kind of shocked. He was like, weren't you talking about that like not that long ago? And I was like, what are you even talking about? And it was because they renamed it that all of a sudden I had no idea what he was even talking about. Let me pull up his name. Let me kick it off to y'all real quick.
Because there is a trend too, I think, of renaming movies after they've been
released. Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah. Good God, and they didn't do that any favors.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, there's always a thing where, like, if something's marketed in a certain way, then people will start knocking it off if it's successful. So, like, I remember when they re-released, like, Wuthering Heights to look like its cover was the Twilight novels.
Oh.
Do you remember that? But, like, that's only if it's successful. So why do all of these damn movies have these stupid names?
Well, it also makes them, they sound, like Bill was saying, it makes them so much more forgettable because they just all are so generic sounding.
Yeah, I literally can't remember the sequence of words in You and Me and Everyone We Know.
I actually had to write it down because I knew I would.
Is it You and Me or Me and You?
So
it's Me and You and Everyone We Know.
That's just crazy.
It's so stupid.
So this is amazing. Because this title actually turns right back into what we're talking about. So the original title of the film, and I'll say if y'all recognize it, it's called We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
Oh.
And it stars, it doesn't star. Well, yeah.
It doesn't really have any actors in it.
His name is Mark Pellegrino, is in the film.
Oh, from Supernatural.
Yes, he's from Supernatural. He's been in a lot of stuff.
He's great. I love Mark Pellegrino.
He's awesome. And
oh, is this Bad Turn Worse?
Yes, this is Mackenzie Davis was in it. This film really has a lot of people that have kind of, you know, shot off into the stratosphere, whether it's, Mackenzie Davis, obviously is kind of all over the place right now. The cinematographer, I believe, has quite a few films under their belt now. But yeah, so he kept on texting me about this film called Bad Turn Worse. And I was just like, I really am at a loss about like what this film is. And then I looked into it and I was like, wait, that was We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
Yeah, I remember that title too.
And it's such a great title to me personally. I love what it kind of says about the film.
We've got to get out of this place, or Bad Turn Worse?
No, We Got to Get Out of This Place. Like, I think that's a very clever title, but as this executive producer kind of friend was mentioning to me, unfortunately, when you search Amazon, when you search Netflix, when you search whatever,
it's going to be all the way at the bottom.
It's going to be all the way at the
bottom. That's what happened with Balls Out, because it was another name, and then they like recut it and then renamed it so that it would be up at top.
Well, and that's what happened with, do you remember that movie? It was like Frankie Goes Boom, but they added 1, 2, 3, dot, 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 Frankie Goes Boom, yeah. So that it would be, yeah, didn't help.
Good Lord.
See, and that's just the way things go. I mean, Bad Turn Worse is just like,
it's not a great title.
That's such a generic title.
It's like, very unsuggestive. It's suggestive of nothing.
Yeah.
Basically.
So, yeah.
It is what it is.
That would be a great name for a movie. It is what it is. About a person who just like gives up and just gives into everything.
I'm just imagining the poster is just like Ryan Reynolds like shrugging.
And it is what it is. Perfectly spaced out, so it's like it is, and then in the middle it says what, and then at the bottom it says it is again, and all the letters line up.
Can I just say, probably the most frustrating movie title? Do you remember that movie that came out with the Reese Witherspoon and Jack Nicholson and like Paul Rudd? It was called like How Did That Happen or something. No, but it's, I think that's the other thing. And I mean, I'm getting off topic. But it doesn't have any punctuation.
Right, there should be a question mark.
Why the fuck isn't there a question mark?
I wish I could tell you, Amanda. That's a whole other topic. Just like we're staying away from politics for the last one, for this one, we're staying away from other naming conventions. Otherwise, I could get hung up for 40 minutes about the profession's relation.
My
least favorite naming convention.
That's a book. That's a big book convention, too.
It's a massive book convention. Ugh. All right. Well, it's time for our final topic. This one was brought up by Bill Graham. And this one is titled, The Disney Machine Requires Our Stars for Fuel.
Where's the song?
It's coming. Hold on.
Oh, okay. I was like, man, my thing doesn't even get a song. Oh, yeah.
That is the Who's Who Are You. The reason we're playing that is because this topic is all about how all the properties that Disney now owns, the giant blockbusters per se, Star Wars, Marvel films, and their burgeoning amount of live-action remakes of their own movies seem to be harvesting the star power from Hollywood. I mean, the trailer for the live-action Beauty and the Beast hit this past week. And Bill, you were like flabbergasted because it's loaded with talent. And that's not even getting into stuff like
Stanley Tucci
and Rogue One, which have casts that like 20 years ago would have been pure Oscar bait casts. So with Disney grabbing up more properties and blockbuster filmmaking turning into our predominant cinematic crop, are we looking at a future in which no actor is untouched by the blockbuster machine? Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off and let us know what you think?
Sure. So just to kind of recap here, we'll give some rough idea of who's in what. So Thor Ragnarok is one that really kind of hit recently. This film is going to have, of course, Hiddleston as Loki. It's going to have Idris Elba. It's going to have everybody that you kind of recognize, right? But it's also going to have Carl Urban, Tessa Thompson from Creed. Woo woo. It's going to have Kate Blanchett, speaking of you know, Woody Allen with Blue Jasmine. Yep, there you go.
I thought you were going to say Woody Allen. Was
I thought you were saying Woody Allen was going to be in Ragnarok.
No. So it's got Ruffalo the Buffalo. It's got Anthony Hopkins. It's got Jeff fucking Goldblum.
That was crazy to me.
Native son of Pittsburgh. Jeff
Goldblum. Are you so excited for Independence Day Resurgence?
Dude, I fucking love Jeff Goldblum.
He's the best. And then so we also have, let's go ahead and go through Beauty and the Beast. Why don't we? Dan Stevens. Nice. Got Emma Watson, of course. We got Luke Evans, who is definitely, yes, playing Gaston.
Ultimate bad boy.
Harry Steel worker of
playing Gaston appropriately.
Yes. We have Ewan McGregor playing Lumiere. We have Ian McKellen playing Cogsworth. We have Gugu Mbatha-Ra. I think that's how she pronounced
it. I salute you for even trying that.
Yeah.
Well, it was good.
We got Emma Thompson. We got Josh Gad. We got Stanley Tucci.
Tucci has a harpsichord.
Yes. I mean, it's absurd.
It's crazy.
It really is absurd. And this is not where it's going to end.
I mean,
close.
The Fast and Furious films are pulling in bigger and bigger people.
Yep.
I'm sure we're going to start hearing about all the crazy people who are going to be in the next Jurassic Park film.
So here's something that I've been kind of thinking about, and you can pull this into superheroes. You can pull this. I mean, look, Michael Keaton played two Batman films, right?
I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, he
played them back to back, right? And then he kind of he went on for what, a decade and a half, maybe even 2 decades after.
I think maybe that clone movie was the end of him.
Yeah, and then he kind of disappeared, right? Then he showed back up to play Birdman, where
he showed up briefly before that in The Other Guys.
Oh, he's
a little
so
bit,
good in The Other Guys.
But he showed up in Birdman, and it really was kind of Inarritu's kind of anti-superhero movie. And it was funny because it was like, oh, this guy's playing Birdman. He played Batman. Huh, interesting. And you thought, oh, that would be the end of it, right? No, he is probably going to play the Vulture in the new Spider-Man film.
Which
and you're just like...
The greatest reversal of self-awareness since Adam Sandler was in Funny People.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these actors keep seeming to, like, make a statement about their career, and then they immediately, like, tell you to go fuck yourself and go back to doing the thing that they just criticized themselves for.
Yeah, right. It's kind of maddening. It's kind of, look, like, as a fan of kind of blockbuster cinema, when it's good, I can't be more pleased about the fact that I get some of these big name stars to play some of these iconic roles and things like that. But when it comes to casting Paul Giamatti as the Rhino in Spider-Man 2 and basically wasting him, burying him under, or you cast someone like Oscar Isaac, who's just super charismatic, and you don't let him dance as Apocalypse, like, you're ruining everything that I love about some of these star power.
Who was it that said that Apocalypse ruined, like, wasted a perfectly good Oscar Isaac?
I mean, I think everyone said that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, Bill, I agree with you because, I mean, this is something that can be traced back to X-Men, the first movie, and Batman Begins, where you get these people who, you know, they're great.
Even before that, I would say that even the later Batman movies before they were rebooted, I mean, you look at Batman and Robin.
Well, I think he was saying good examples.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that the reason this has become a thing is because you got people like Michael Caine and Liam Neeson in that movie and Gary Oldman. And those were good films that use these people in a way that helped to boost their profile amongst a whole younger generation. And suddenly these serious actors who never would have thought to do this before suddenly said to themselves, like, oh, okay, this is a legit thing. But I feel like we're moving away from that, and ever since we were able to get them and start making all this money, there's no reason to do anything else. And they're starting to realize that, and so that's all we've got now.
Well, yeah, and I think this is... I think one of the things we were talking about in relation to this topic was also how the franchises are bigger than these names, or are becoming bigger than some of these talents. Because honestly, I don't think anybody really cares who plays a character in a comic book movie, as long as that comic book movie gets made.
As long as they don't race swap.
Well, that's a good point. I think that's a minority. It's a minority.
I know what you mean. That is a vocal fan minority.
Right.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I agree.
But I think it's just people just want these movies to get out there. And I think this is something that was brought up with the... with the casting of Alden...
Ehrenreich.
Oh, geez. As Han Solo, he's going to be remembered... how difficult of a time is he going to have getting work after Star Wars? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Are people really going to remember him for anything else?
Well, that's the problem that, you know, Kristen Stewart has had to wrestle with.
Right.
So she's done that by basically abandoning Hollywood.
Well, and, she
herself
always
to Olivier Assayas.
She always was in that mode, and I would argue that Twilight was actually an indie film before it fucking blew up. Like, I mean, if you look at what Twilight was actually made for versus what it brought in, that was an indie movie. Like,
yeah,
nobody was paying attention to it, and then all of a sudden it was just everywhere, and
that's
everybody
right.
was talking
as
about.
It was to an IP that was out there in the culture. I feel like it wasn't that much of a surprise
that it blew up.
Right. It's not like when she starred in Adventureland, and like
right.
if Adventureland had blown up that much, people
great
might have
movie,
been more confused.
By the way.
But I think people were sort of expecting Twilight to do what it did.
Well, it's kind of like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie ever was, it's basically, it looks like an indie movie. Like, if you look, like, the 1989 movie, it, like, the way it shot, the aesthetics very much look like the way we think of indie movies. But that's because it was made on a very, very low budget. And then the next movie, they were like, let's blow it up and get Vanilla Ice on this shit. Like... And that, you know, but that's
not just Sam Rockwell offering kids cigarettes.
Oh, Sam Rockwell, man, he's coming up a lot.
What the hell's going on?
I don't know. I mean, bless his heart, I love him, but yeah, I think that's the problem is that Bill, I know that I shared that article with you about the idea of like this movie star being dead is people aren't going to the theaters to see movie stars; they're going to the theaters to see a franchise movie, they're going to see, you know, a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie or a live action Disney movie.
It's funny because if you look at a poster like the Avengers, right? And I don't have it pulled up, and that's for a purpose because I can pretty much guarantee you that the stars' names are not the focus of that poster, right?
Well, you know,
it's
the crazy
everybody's
thing,
faces. Yeah. It's everybody playing these people that you recognize, right? You recognize Thor. You recognize Iron Man. You recognize Hulk. And you recognize, you know, Black Widow on there. And you're like, oh, those people. Yeah, I love those people. And if, you know, you went to the average movie fan and you told them, hey, can you name who plays Thor, they'll probably be like,
well, I mean,
he's Australian, you know.
There are plenty of people I've talked to who profess to being huge, you know, Avengers fans, huge Spider-Man fans, just comic book movie fans in general, who don't know half the actors' names, and it's
right, which
yeah,
is
that's
a huge
kind
difference
of crazy
from like Indiana Jones,
right,
where people are like Harrison Ford.
Exactly. Right. And it's something that, you know, it used to be people went to the movies to see Liz Taylor or Steve McQueen or even, you know, later on like Julia Roberts. Now people aren't going to see Money Monster. because of Julia Roberts, because she doesn't have, I think partly because she doesn't have that much appeal, and also because Money Monster isn't a hot property because it's not one of these movies. But the, I mean, what is that? But the, I mean, what is, like you said, it's like these people get so overshadowed.
It's even more than that, because like, if you look at, you can look at people who've been in some of now the highest grossing movies of all time.
Right.
And like, no one followed Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor, to In the Heart of the Sea, or even The Huntsman. And no one followed Robert Downey Jr. to The Judge.
Well, yeah.
I would argue that The Judge didn't have mass appeal anyways. But what's actually happened, and it's interesting that you mentioned some of the old Hollywood stars and things like that, because what they used to do was they literally signed up to become a franchise. Their stardom became a franchise. And what's happened is Hollywood has flipped it and said, no, you're going to star in our franchise. And if you leave, we'll keep making these movies regardless.
Yeah. And Spider-Man's a good example of that.
Yeah, well, people come into these franchises and then leave, and nobody notices, right?
Back in the day, you'd have like the cigar-chomping Hollywood bigwig being like, all right, we're going to put you in the new Gable picture. And then nowadays, it's like, all right, well, we're going to throw you in the next Marvel film.
You're going to be one of 50 people in the next Marvel movie.
And that's great. They're diluting their share so much. Like Chris Evans can't even predict himself being the person with the most screen time in a movie named after the character he's playing.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a little crazy, but I mean, I don't fault them for it, and I don't think it's a bad thing technically, but it is, it's one of the most disheartening things. And we're pretty much talking about actors in this, but I'll throw in a director. I mean, I loved Creed. And then I found out that Ryan Coogler was going to do Black Panther. And now I found out that like Michael B. Jordan's going to be in Black Panther as well. And it's just like, why are we taking some of our most interesting, promising talent and like making them do these things? I mean, like, I understand that there's not like a gun to their head, but financially, like...
The argument for that, though, specifically, and in a lot of respects, yeah, because most, let's be frank, most of these directors that are given kind of, oh, you made an indie that was mildly successful, here's this huge franchise.
Right.
Most of those people.
And that's beyond Disney. Like that's way beyond Disney. Well, I mean, that could have made a lot of
those, everyone. I mean, Colin Trevorrow did Jurassic World.
Yes, but most of those people are white males, right? And this is an African American male.
But like, why does it have to be any of them? Like, I would love Rian Johnson to make a new independent movie, not another Star Wars film. Like, give me another Brick or another Looper. Well, you know? And then Brian Coogler, like, go ahead and do whatever the hell you want because you're great. Like,
yeah.
Part of it, though, is because Rian Johnson is a huge Star Wars fan. So that's part of
the problem. That's another thing to talk about another day.
Yeah. That's part of the appeal for a lot of these directors is, and that's something that's kind of the snake eating itself is what's actually happening with the Star Wars franchise right now is literally the directors that are signing up to do to direct Star Wars films grew up being fans of Star Wars, and now they're making what basically equates to Star Wars fan fiction in a lot of ways. And it's like,
believe that this will be a full topic someday.
Yeah, this it becomes very meta. But I mean, look, like the fact that Ryan Coogler is making Black Panther and that he's casting, like this is kind of one of those situations where I try and look at it from the best possible reason, right? And
I think
part
you
of
can
this
in this instance,
yeah, he is casting
instance,
a lot.
It's part of the broader, you know, thing that you wanted to talk about, Bill. I mean, like this is going to sound awful. It's a goddamn talent trap.
It is. I think, and I don't know if necessarily the Disneys of the world are to blame for movie stardom to kind of falling on its face. I mean, we either have we talked a little bit about this, but we either have these $5 to $10 million indie films or less, or we have these giant juggernaut franchises, which are going to survive regardless of how much money they make. Like, I mean, literally the Ninja Turtles movie is just somehow, some way, that movie is going to make enough money to justify its own existence.
Yeah.
Whether someone gets fired for it or not, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, there's probably going to be a third Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film because it's a franchise, and that's the way they do things now. It's bananas, but that's the way it's just kind of going about. But I would say that star power is both overrated, and it's also something that when you watch as many films as we both, you know, all three of us do, we are blessed to be able to pick out a star and follow their trajectory, right? We can be like, oh, I really like Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm going to watch all of his films, whether they're $20 million movies, whether they're $5 million movies, or whether they're Doctor Strange, which are coming out. You know, it doesn't matter. We're just going to kind of follow that actor because we like them. We want to see, we think that they make interesting moves and interesting movies, so we just follow their work. The vast majority of people just don't have that either time or commitment to do that.
My final statement about this, because we got to wrap up, is just that whenever you have a conversation with people nowadays and you bring up an actor that you like, the next little thought experiment that happens is like, who should they play? You know, and you start throwing out names. Either like, oh, they could be like a great Robin, or they could be a great this. And it's like, we're looking at all of our talent and saying, where can we plug them into this thing that we've done to ourselves?
Well, and I think, too, it's just the lack of mystique that surrounds a lot of talent now, whereas actors before, or I should say movie stars before, were like on another plane of existence. Like, they were basically untouchable. You know, whereas now,
I think, like a Pacino or a De Niro or someone like that, there aren't. I can't remember his name, but Last of the Mohicans, I can't remember his name.
Like Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
I think it's just something
about
where
the mystique around that guy, right?
But yeah, and I just don't think that a lot of people, like, I brought up Liz Taylor. Like, Liz Taylor was like, oh, Liz Taylor. You know, and like, you would read movie magazines about these people and like, you knew very little about them. Whereas now, and I think part of the overexposure is on part of the studio because they have to do constant press junkets.
Well,
you know, they have to do like featurettes. They have to do like behind the scenes, and it's overexposure, and it just takes away from the mystery and like the appeal surrounding them.
Well, I was going to say, and I know I said the last thing was my last thing, but I lied. There's a thing nowadays. It's like a toxic kind of fandom.
Yeah.
Like, people don't care about creators. Like, the concept of a creator is basically dying around us. And so all people want is the next installment of the thing that they like, and they want it the way they want it. And I think that that's, like, we don't want a star who we don't know what he's going to do next. We want to pin him down. We want to get him in a franchise so we can constantly just say, there he is, and that's my man, and I don't know. It's a little depressing to me. But again, I mean, like, I like some of the superhero films. So it's hard. It's hard for me, and I don't have an answer to this thing.
I mean, they're getting paid.
Yeah, it's great that they're doing that.
So the other thing that's kind of happening to some people, and this is kind of going a little bit away from movies, but it relates, because when you're in a franchise like a Star Wars, or a franchise like you know, the Marvel films or the X-Men franchise, it's hard to get away for a long enough period. I've heard multiple times, you know, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence recently pulled this off, this remarkable thing where she starred in both two giant franchises simultaneously. She was in Hunger Games leading the way, and also X-Men, which
while also doing a David O. Russell film now and then.
Yeah, which is just mind-boggling, right?
Well, that's good. That means that there is some kind of hope moving forward that this won't pen people in too much.
Yes, but what I was kind of relating to is so in TV, it is for many of the network shows and things like that, it is good, solid work if you can get on to a syndicated show, or if you can get on to a show that's, you know, last 6-7 seasons. But it's also kind of depressing because you realize how much effort and work they have to put into it, and they don't have enough free time to actually go do a lot of other things that they may do. So during their 20s and 30s, they may spend 7 years making something. And I had this interview with Tom Welling, who was who starred in Smallville, right? He was in that show for 12 seasons, 11 years. And I asked him point blank, it was one of the first questions I asked him, because, you know, it was clear that he was trying to become kind of regenerate himself. And he's still fairly young. I think he's about 32, 34, somewhere around there. And I asked him, I said, if Smallville is the best thing that you creatively do, is that a bad thing? And he said, no, it was 11 years of my life, but I loved every minute of it. It was work. It was great work. And, you know, it's interesting because you can fall into this trap. And I think Keira Knightley was the one that recently said that about the Pirates of the Caribbean films, which in a way made her a star, right? You know who Keira Knightley is because of those films. Somehow she kind of escaped that. Same with Orlando Bloom. A lot of people recognize the people in that franchise outside of those characters. And I think
no one recognizes Orlando Bloom.
I would argue. I would very much disagree with that.
Yeah. With what? No one recognizes
Orlando Bloom. Yeah. Orlando Bloom is dead to the world. He's going back to the Pirates of the Caribbean.
He can stay there.
But she said, she basically said, I've been making these films since I was 17. I'm done.
Dear Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's the trap. Like I said, it's a talent trap. But that's all the time we have for today. So it's time to say goodbye. Time to let people know some stuff. Let us know what you thought of our crazy thoughts and opinions by finding us on iTunes. Like I said, give us a comment and a rating. You can also reach out on Twitter at @FilmStageShow or on Facebook by searching for The Film Stage Show. And of course, by going to thefilmstage.com and commenting on the episode page that will be posted when this hits your iTunes feed. If you have any ideas for topics you want to hear us talk about, scream them out loud as you can. Trust me, we can hear you. Or you can just use those previously mentioned methods to contact us. Speaking of contacting us, why don't we tell the people where we can be found online? Amanda Waltz.
Yes. I am at Media Waltz on Twitter, also Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and you can find my blog Steel Cinema on WordPress.
All right, Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at @MeAmCableBFG. No, I'm just kidding. @CableBFG. That is self-referential anyways. That's creepy. And you can also find me writing about movies and film. Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
At The Film Stage. And you can also find me at freshfiction.tv.
All right. You can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, everything really, at Brian J. Rowan. You can find me writing at thefilmstage.com. And that's about it. I've kind of let my personal site go to fallow. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for following us down this weird little side angle. We hope you'll join us next time. Again, probably in 2 weeks. We will, of course, be back on Monday, Tuesday, probably, with a review of something. We believe it will be Love and Friendship, so we hope to see you then. Until that time, though, thank you very much. Have a great week.